Did you know that there are scientifically proven strategies you can use when designing an online course that will not only make it more likely for your students to finish your courses, but so that it will make it easier for them to get the results you're promising as well? I did not know this, but I have a special guest on the show today who studied this. In fact, she has worked with universities and colleges, and she has helped them to design their curriculum so that their students get better results. And she is with us today to teach us everything she knows. She has designed what she calls the Summit First Framework, which is a backwards planning model for creating courses that virtually guarantees that your students will get better results. So stick around, because we are going to dig into this on today's episode of the podcast.
Welcome to the Tiny Course Empire Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to helping you launch and grow your digital course business, even if you don't have a big team or a six-figure ads budget. We'll help you design smart systems, take consistent action, and achieve massive success on your own terms. Now, here's your host, Cindy Bedar.
Hey, it's Cindy, and thanks for spending a few minutes of your day with me. You'll find the show notes and the recommended resources for this episode at tinycourseempire.com/124. While you're there, be sure to hit the subscribe button. New episodes drop every Monday morning, and next week, we're going to take a deep dive into launching a brand new course. I'm going to give you my top tips for creating a buzz about an upcoming launch, some pricing strategies you might want to consider, and three ways that you can build an audience even if this is your first course. But that is next week. This week is all about designing a course that gets results for your students, and I have invited a guest expert to share her insights with us. Lisa Tussey is a learning design expert helping solopreneur course creators who love their communities. She's created and teaches the Summit First Framework, which uses a backward design approach to course creation, and I can't wait to get into that with her. Lisa, welcome to the Tiny Course Empire Podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to join me. I'm so excited to talk to you about course creation from your point of view. So I gave the listeners a little bit of an introduction, but I want you to tell me your story. Tell me what it is you do. I know it's something about learning design, but I don't really know what that means. Can you tell me more about that and how you came to kind of embrace that as like your field and what you're doing with that right now?
Yeah. And thank you for the opportunity. I'm so thrilled to be here. It's really an honor. Thank you, Cindy. Yes. So learning design is designing learning in a way that learners will be successful. And so it's not the curriculum part of it. It's not the content part of it. It's the designing part of it. And so you ask questions like, would learners learn this better if they built something, or if they read about it, or they watched a video, or if they had an infographic, or all of the above? Like, what is the best way for them to learn something? And so that's kind of at the heart of learning science. And then there is kind of a seminal work called Understanding by Design that was written several decades ago now. And it's referred to as backwards design. And the goal of that is you start with the end goal in mind, and then you work backwards from that. And so the learning science then is built around that. Not all learning design follows that kind of a model, but it's the model that I've embraced and that I follow.
I love that, design it backwards. I talk about that in a lot of different areas in what I teach, because oftentimes it's really the best way to get to where you're going, right? Is by figuring out where that endpoint is and then working backwards. So I love that this is kind of the model that you teach. So you mentioned that it's not about the curriculum. It's not about the information that's being shared. It's about how the information is shared. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
So,
Yes, exactly.
can you give me an example? I know that you the reason side note, you guys, the reason Lisa is on the podcast today is because she took my course, Tiny Course Empire, and she deconstructed it on her blog and said, these are all the good things about Tiny Course Empire. I don't know that you mentioned any bad things. Hopefully you did, because there's
No,
always
I didn't.
bad things. So she wrote about it on her blog about why Tiny Course Empire fits into this learning design model that she's created. So can you give me some examples? And it doesn't have to be from my course, obviously, but it can be from anything. But give me some examples of how learning design impacts students, impacts somebody who's taking an online course, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that I also took your course creation course, quick and easy course
Quick and easy
creation,
course creation. Yep.
and the challenge. I think like last year took the course creation challenge. So I would encourage anybody if when those come up again, take the opportunity because they are really excellent.
So let me interject here that course creation challenge is coming up.
Don't miss that one for sure. Even with my, even with my expertise and my background, I really found that really helpful to go through, and it really guided me well and kept me focused. And so I really appreciated that. When I did the blog on the Tiny Course Empire, one of the things, or the thing, I guess, that I pulled out was you'd done a welcome video. And not only did you connect with your learners, because that's a big part of who I am, is connection and community. By them seeing you, right? Seeing them, talking to them, it was, I think, under 2 minutes. It doesn't have to be something really elaborate, but in those 2 minutes, you connected with them. You let them know what was in the course. You let them know where to find the things that were in the course. You let them know if they had technical problems, what they should do. If they had questions, what they should do. And then at the end, you gave them some advice on how to be successful. And that really communicated that you really cared and that you were really connecting. And so that's one element of course design that really helps learners be successful because they, especially with an online course, you can feel kind of alone. And so that let them know that they weren't just doing this into a void. Like if they had questions, there was someone to go to. And at the end, when they had accomplished, creating something, that you were interested in seeing it. And so that's a big thing, like having your learning, being able to share it with someone. One of my favorite examples of bad course design is I was in a course that was ridiculously expensive. It was a career coaching course, and the navigation they'd used, well, I won't say the name of
Yeah,
the
don't let's not throw anybody under the
they
bus.
yeah I won't say the program that they had used. But it was so badly done, the navigation. You would have to go backwards in the breadcrumbs to get back to anything. Like once you had gotten to an endpoint, you would have to work your way backwards. And one of the colleagues I was with in the course had actually taken sheets of typing paper or printer paper and taped them together and drew a map of where everything was. So when she wanted to find something, and it took more than one piece of paper. It took like four sheets. And I remember her holding that up to me and think, and I remember thinking it should never be that hard to navigate
Wow.
a course.
Yeah, that's bad. That's bad.
That puts and I designed courses for colleges and universities, and one of the things that research shows, as well as what they knew about their students, we had a rule that you could never click more than, I think, two was the ultimate, and they preferred one to get to anything. You should be
Yeah.
able to get to them one click. And so that's just kind of some examples of caring about the learner, caring about making sure that they keep going, that they keep persisting. And then as far as like on the content side, designing it, it is things like making sure that that end goal is communicated really clearly. And we'll talk about the backwards design bit of it in a little bit. But some of the other things are taking the material and putting it into chunks, or what I call kindling size pieces, because I use a hiking theme with everything. Because if you just keep telling people information and information and information. Your brain doesn't have any place to put it, to categorize it. And so this is one of the most interesting things that I learned about, like, how our brains work and store information is, if you see, we store like the types of dogs, right, in our brain. So we might, like, you know, a Saint Bernard and, you know, a German Shepherd and a poodle, and they kind of all go in the same little group as the dogs. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons when you meet someone and they tell you that their name is, their last name is Shepherd, the next time you see them, you might say their last name is Bernard or think their name is Bernard, because it kind of went in that same little category. It's one of the reasons we make those mistakes. And so you can really help learners be more successful by giving them those categories, and then they only have to remember those categories, and it's easier to remember the things in the categories.
Got it. And that makes
generally
perfect
learning
sense.
Science says like 3 to 5 is ideal. You can go up to 7. After that, you start losing people.
Yeah. I really struggle with that. I tend to, my course style, as you know, is tiny courses, and they're usually 7 to 9 video lessons. And I really struggle with keeping the video lessons short. My ideal is probably like 5 to 10 minutes, and I never, never get there. They're all 20 minutes or more. For whatever reason, that's where I land. Do you have any tips for like chunking things down further? Like, how can we look at our course information? How can we look at what it is we're teaching and break it down further? What's a good way for us to look at that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would also put a caveat that, now, we've all watched fascinating hour-long things on YouTube that held our attention. So,
oh, for sure, Lord of the Rings,
necessarily, yeah,
3.5 hours. We never move.
So the time itself isn't problematic. But there was a study that they did early on in the days of MOOCs, which are massive open online courses. You might remember those, and they found that if a video was, and I'm not going to remember the exact numbers, but I think it was if the videos were 6 minutes or less, people watched all 6 minutes. If it was 7 or 8 minutes, they might have watched 5 minutes. Once it got to like 20 minutes, they were down to watching a minute. Mm. So interestingly enough,
fascinating.
Yeah. But the way to prevent that, and you do this well in your courses, is within that 20 minute lesson, you make sure that you categorize within that lesson. So it might be, you know, first I'm going to introduce to you what a tiny course is, and then I'm going to give you 3 examples of a tiny course, and then I'm going to give you 5 tips on creating your own tiny course. And so now they've got 3 anchors to put that information in. And so it also helps you, your brain likes to know how far along you are in a video. And so it's like, oh, okay, now she's giving us the examples. We're done with the introduction. She gives us samples. We're about a third of the way there. We're making progress. We like to like know where, you know, I mean, it's amazing the impact those little progress bars that they have in courses now. Like, I won't do a course without a progress wheel or progress bar. All your courses have those. And it's just like, there's something about watching that. You want to fill it. You want to finish it. You want to finish that lesson so that you fill that progress bar. And so that really helps your brain a lot, be able to complete and get through the content.
That is 100% true. In my experience, I was just watching a YouTube video yesterday that was 27 minutes long, which is long for a YouTube video. And in the beginning, she said, in part 1, I'm going to teach you this. And in part 2, we're going to talk about that. And in part 3, we're going to talk about something else. And that really did make the 27 minutes not seem so daunting, because I'm really good at looking at a video and saying, that's three minutes. I don't have time to watch a 3-minute video. Come on. Right. But I sat and watched that 27-minute video because she told me what the milestones were. So yeah, that's 100% true.
And I don't think we have any video players any longer that don't have a progress bar of the video playing, mm-hmm. but yeah. I still yeah. have had experiences, usually HR videos, right? Where you're forced to watch some kind of training and and you don't know how long it is. It doesn't give you any indication whether this video is 20 minutes or 3 minutes. And it's absolute torture because you don't know what you're in for. You don't know how long it's going to be.
The only ones I can think of today are webinar replays where they don't give you the option to speed up the video or pause it or rewind it in any way. You're just forced to sit there and watch it as don't do that to your people. First of all, I think that's really terrible design.
Especially when you're teaching, you know, you get distracted, your dog barks or the kids come in or whatever, and you miss something and you want to go back and you want to make sure you got that point. Having a 10-second rewind is really important so that you're not like fiddling with some like tedious little bar. I'm finding that a little bit hard to find in some of the course platforms.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a solution I'm looking for because I want a player that has that 10 seconds so that you can go back and make sure you don't miss that point. Or maybe you wanted to take a note and you wanted to make sure you got it right.
Excellent. That's a good point. That's a good point. So how did you, you mentioned community. You're you're big into community as well, which I find fascinating because these two things, and in full disclosure, I've known Lisa for a while. And when she first told me that she had two passions in life, and one was course design and one was community building, I'm like, I don't know how those two things go together, but they really do. So can you tell me a little bit about your community? I don't even know what you really call it. Community what? Community building, community engagement, community.
I call it community and connection.
Community and connection. Okay.
Yeah, I read.
And I know you do this locally, and that's why I had a hard time kind of seeing the connection there. Because you kind of focus on local, but this really has a huge connection in the online course world as well. So how does that fit in with online course design?
I'd actually read a book. It's probably been 5 years now. By Johann Harry called Last Connections. And it really resonated with me. And he talked about the crisis that we have with anxiety and depression. And that that basically we're anxious and depressed because we have explicit of good reason to be anxious and depressed. And then he goes on to talk about lost connections to other people, lost connections to meaningful employment, lost connections to nature, to good health, to activity, and these kinds of things. And then he talks about those kind of in a personal way, but also a societal way. And so I really wanted to start to address those kinds of things. And you may remember that I feel very proud of myself that I honed down to only 5 businesses, only businesses I'd like to do. And I've only launched 2. I feel like I'm really restraining myself here. And so that's really important to me because I think we need some global societal solutions to these kinds of things. And I was very involved with Simon Sinek during the pandemic and his communities. And we had this international community that built up around his, and we did like book clubs and people from all over the world that I just recently connected with again this week. And so, you know, just that emphasis on how do we help people have meaningful work? And Simon Sinek talks about start with why. And so that was a big focus of that. And so when I was looking into wanting to do, I knew I wanted to do an online business where I taught people something, right? And I knew I wanted to connect with people. And at first, I really wasn't going to do the learning science, learning science instructional design angle, because kind of like you said, it was like, where's the connection there, right? I was going to help people connect to nature through hiking and kayaking and those kinds of things, or connect to meaningful employment. And then I realized this is helping people connect to meaningful employment. This is helping course creators have a meaningful business in which they are having such an impact on their life. And it's helping them connect to that. One of those key things that can really make a difference in your life and really make an improvement in your life and then in the lives of people that you are teaching. And I noticed that there are, you know, there are courses for sales and some of the sleazy webinars where, you know, all they care about is that big launch and selling a bunch of courses and then they're done. Mm-hmm. Like, I've taken some of those courses, they're done. Like, there is no community, there is no contacting the creator, you get the course and that's it. But I've been in communities like yours and Kelly McCauzy's and Jennifer Burks. And what I saw was people who really care about their learners. You know, if you're teaching about cat behavior, you really care that the cat owners have a good relationship with their cats. You know, if you're teaching wicker artwork, you really can, you know, care that people's projects turn out well. Or if you're teaching mindset coaching, you really care that people have a transformation. And so you need to be connected to your learners in order to do that. And good course design helps you connect to your learners to do that. So sort of an underlying motivation or inspiration for me for all this really has to do with addressing depression and anxiety. It's not really blatantly part of what I talk about or what I write about in my about sections, but ultimately that's kind of what's underneath all of it.
Oh, that's interesting. So that's kind of your why.
That's my why, connecting to ideas, people, and resources so that we have a better sense of belonging, or so that everybody has a place, sense of belonging. And meaningful employment is a really big part of that. It really makes a difference in your life and your mental health.
So you mentioned a little while ago that you were going to talk more about backwards design. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so backwards design is you start at the end goal. And Cindy, you do a really good job with this, whether you're teaching people how to create a sales page or how to create a course or how to write an email. It's like, what's the purpose? What is it you're trying to accomplish, right? And so it's the same thing with course design. And the question that you want to ask with course design is, what do you want the learner to be able to do? What do you be able to want them to demonstrate? Because knowing how to knit a scarf is not the same as them being able to knit a scarf at the end. So you don't want to teach them how to knit a scarf. You want them to knit a scarf at the end, right? And so you have to ask themselves. And when I was working with the college and university courses, we would always ask an assessment question. Well, how will we know? How will we know they've learned to knit a scarf? What can we do to prove they know how, that they can prove that they know how to knit a scarf, right? Like, what's the end assessment? Well, in that case, it would be you have to knit a scarf.
There's a right? scarf.
There's a scarf in the end.
There's a scarf in the end. Yeah.
So things like that are pretty easy. You know, what is a scarf or, you know, or a wicker basket or, you know, your cat's behaving better than it was behaving before. Some of the other things, like maybe mindset coaching or some of those things, it's the same thing. You know, you find a way to objectively measure it, give it like a time and number. Like, maybe it's you will interact with three people this week, or you will interact with three people per week for a month. You know, something like that. It's something that you can tell that they've made progress, that they've made the transformation that you are teaching them to make. And so that's the very first thing, is you have this big goal of something demonstrable, something they do. Then you ask yourself, what are the little goals that they need to be successful at, to be successful at that big one? Because if you just try to jump into that, like if, you know, somebody just tried to sit down and write a course, they're going to fail. You know, it doesn't matter how well you tell them, you know, create a course. They're not going to be able to do it unless you give them the steps that they need along the way. And so you ask yourself again, what are the little things? And I call them trail markers because I use this hiking analogy. What are the trail markers along the way that will make them successful at that end goal? And so if it were knitting a scarf, it might be they need to know how to cast on, they need to know how to make, you know, a purl and a knit stitch, and they need to know how to cast off, and then they need to know how to finish the project, right? If they can't do one of those four things, they're not going to have a scarf at the end. And so again, it should be something demonstrable, something they do. And then when you have those identified, you work back from that and you look at each of those little goals and you say, what do they need to be able to accomplish this little goal or this little, I call them learner destinations. What do they need to accomplish that little or get to that destination, right? And so is it, do they need a video of you demonstrating it? Do they need written instructions? Do they need a chart? Do they need a checklist? Do they need some kind of graphic or animation? And so you ask yourself, what's the best way for me to show them what it is they need to do or teach them what it is they need to do? And then you write all those out. It's kind of a brainstorming session, right? You, mm-hmm. you gather all of that, you record what it is, and then that's all that goes into the course. It might be, the history of knitting might be absolutely fascinating, but it's going to do nothing to make them successful with casting on, doing the stitches, casting off, and finishing the project, right? So it doesn't go in the course. So now, not only have you made it more likely that your learner is going to be successful, you've made it easier on yourself. Because one of the questions yes. I hear all the time is, how do I know what to put in my course? How do I know how much to give people? Am I giving them enough for what I'm charging them? How, and that's not really the right question. The right question is, and I've heard you say this in different ways as well, is however much it takes to make them be successful with what it is you're right. trying to get them to do. That's
and
how
not,
much goes in the
and
course.
Not one sentence more.
And nothing more, right?
Yes.
And then after that, you organize it all. You, what we were talking about before, kind of chunking it, what I call kindling size pieces. You categorize it so that it makes sense so that they can absorb it. They don't have what's called cognitive overload, which they're just not like, it's just so much information you can't remember. Mm. And so you put it into those categories for them so that it's very easy for them to know where they are in it, whether they've been successful, whether they're done with that. And then it helps with retention as well. They'll be able to remember it better and be able to apply it better. And then the end is just kind of putting it all together, putting it into the course.
Mm-hmm. Online courses have such a, and I've pulled this statistic out before, that there is a very poor completion rate for online courses. Right. Historically, it's somewhere in the single digits. Do you think that by applying these principles of learning design, that we can improve the completion rate? Because I can already see how this could really impact somebody finishing a course. Because if you dump the history of knitting into a course, and all they want to do is make a scarf for a Christmas gift, you're going to lose them, right?
Yeah, they won't finish.
They won't finish it. Yeah.
Yeah, they won't finish it. They won't be successful. And you know, and a key is being really clear what you want them to accomplish. I mean, that's one of the things you do with your workbooks, right? And you give people challenges and time frames even. Mm-hmm. You know, so that they can apply what they're learning right away. That's really key. Like, try to encourage them to apply it, because if they apply it, then they are going to remember it. They're going to be ready for the next thing. They're going to be ready for your next course. So getting them to apply it is really critical as well. And I'm absolutely convinced, and I'm going to be gathering a lot of data on that, on how this improves course completion for people, because it's not going to take care of all the problems, right? Because some of the reasons we don't complete courses is because we're really busy, or we change our minds about what we want to learn about, or right. you know, there can be lots of reasons. But I have, you know, experienced a lot of the courses in this business, in this field of course creation, and there are so many unnecessary barriers to learners that just, you know, really create those roadblocks and challenges. And we don't need to make it any harder than it already is when we're pressed for time. And that's our number one challenge.
I've experienced this myself. I've, like you, I've bought a lot of courses. And the big thing for me is that they don't give, a lot of course creators don't give us a lot of different ways to absorb the information. So I'm thinking of a course that I spent quite a bit of money on, and it was all video, which was fine. But when I went to apply what I had learned, it would have been really helpful to have a checklist so that I didn't have to go back and watch the video again. So I ended up having to make my own checklist. And if the course creator had just supplied that to me, it would have made it easier for me to be successful.
That's huge. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's really important on two levels. One, it is tedious to try and find something in a video. So you desperately need a transcript. Then you could search. You can search for it. You can find what it was, the point that you needed, or you can scan it and read it really quickly. But more importantly, even than that, and it's absolutely critical that you give people multiple ways to digest it. There should be an audio. There should be a video, if there's video. Video, audio, transcripts, checklists, any kind of way that you can help. Give them different ways. And the number one reason for me is accessibility.
Yes.
So we have so many people. So you are automatically cutting yourself off from a big customer population when you don't make your material accessible. Unfortunately, I think most of the platforms we put our content in now already take care of a lot of the accessibility. Your courses should be able to be read by a screen reader. You probably don't need to worry about that. I still go through and test it with a screen reader myself, because I want to know that it reads with a screen reader and fix it. And screen readers aren't just for people who are totally blind. They're for people with any kind of vision impairment, but they're also for people with mobility issues. And so a lot of people will navigate through a course or a website using their keyboard. And so they'll turn on the screen reader so that they can navigate through their keyboard rather than through.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mouse.
So just, yeah. For people who don't know or who aren't familiar with that term, screen reader is an app that will read text out loud, typically used by people who are visually impaired, but also apparently people with mobility issues, so that they can navigate through a website or through a PDF or through another document without being able to necessarily see it. So super important. And this technology has gotten much better in recent years. It used to be a much bigger issue than it is today. Even, for example, Vimeo, which is the service that I use to host my course content, my videos, does automatic transcripts now, so that the transcript is right on the screen. But I've also had people contact me and say, can I get a transcript of this course because Vimeo is not available in my country? So that's something to be aware of as well.
And when you think about accessibility issues like transcripts and closed captioning and alt text, which is describing any image that you've used, when you think about it, makes it better for everyone.
It does. It does.
It's just amazing. It doesn't matter if you're sighted or not. Putting those principles in place makes it better for you. One of my big pet peeves, if I could change the world, the one thing I would try to get people to do is when you post a link, describe what the link is and then put the hyperlink on those words. And so instead of saying to access the Tiny Course Empire course, click here, and making the active link on the word here, and access my challenge here, and then you put the link on here, and access my podcast here, and you put the link on here. What will happen is when people use the screen reader, they, much like a sighted person might do, is you go to a website or a course and you kind of look at it and you see the title and you see the subtitles and you see the lessons and you see the pictures And then you start reading through the course and you see the links and you come back and you look at those links at some point, probably, and click on them. You usually don't do it as you're reading through. Well, screen reader kind of does that for the person. And so there are sections. So you go to the section that tells you what all the titles are and what all the subtitles are and what all the images are and what the links are. So you know what you get?
You get a whole list of here.
You get link here, link here, link. And they have no idea where those links are going to take them. And then,
oh my gosh.
It's so frustrating. And but worse than that, the worst thing you can do, and I think we finally normalized that people don't do this anymore, but is to actually put the URL in rather than attach it to text. And I had an experience when they were training us on this in an accessibility course, and they ran a screen reader where somebody had made a bunch of mistakes like this, right? And one of them was they'd put the URL in. And so you hear link. http://, for about that time you're ready to scream, and I was just like, I will never do that to anyone ever. It was so painful, and they made us listen to the entire URL in the training, and it really like seared in my brain, don't ever do that to a person. But for sighted people too, it you know, or people with good mobility, we had something sent out at work one time and they had used here, and I knew what I was looking for and I knew the name of it. I couldn't find it in the email. It took me like 5 minutes to find it because they'd used the word here rather than the session I was looking for. And I thought it was just me because I'm hypersensitive to it, but I talked to a couple of my colleagues and they all said like, yeah, I couldn't find that in the email either. Like I looked and looked and looked and couldn't find where I was supposed to go, what I was supposed to click on.
So the bottom line is, make it easy for your students to be successful. Make it easy for them. Another example that I thought of that may be applicable as well. I have a coaching client who purchased a course and she's having a lot of trouble getting through the course, because the woman who is teaching it has an accent and she's having trouble understanding what the teacher is saying in the videos, and closed captioning would solve that problem.
Yep.
Instantly. Yeah. So we're a global, we're more and more global, right? Mm-hmm. I have customers, I have students all over the world. And course creators, you know, coaches, you probably have students all over the world too. So, and students of varying physical abilities. So think about how you can make it easier for them to be successful, to finish and to accomplish the goal that you've set out for them to accomplish with your course. I think that's really the bottom line.
And there's two reasons. One is you really care about your learners. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about
Hopefully.
Your community and the ones I'm in. Like, people really care about the learners. So you want them to be successful. But also, just on a real practical level, if they're successful and they complete your course, they're ready to buy your next course.
Yes.
And so just from a financial perspective, it's to our benefit to make sure that learners can complete their courses. 100%. You know, with as much as we have control over that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I love that. I'm going to end on that note because that's important. Lisa, where can people learn more about you?
They can go to connectedcoursedesigns.com, and that's where they can learn about everything that I do. And there is also a link that you can put in the show notes where they can get the free course. If you sign up for my email newsletter, you get the free course that lays out the entire Summit First. It's called the Summit First Framework, which is what I described as the backwards design.
Oh,
and then
excellent.
I also do course review packages. Right now, I probably won't do this for very long, but right now I'm doing course review packages where I will review your course and I will point out 5 things that you could improve and give you detailed instructions on how to improve 3, the top 3, most important 3 of those. And for listeners of the podcast, you can get $50 off with a coupon.
Oh, and so, awesome. We'll put the coupon in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
It'll be good for our, it'll be good till Halloween. I'll take it down Halloween. I'll give people a chance to listen to
All right.
Or
good.
Give
So,
a chance.
So if you're listening in the first 5 weeks or so that this podcast goes up, because it will post on Monday the 16th. I had to do a little math in my head. Sorry. Monday the 16th is when this podcast will air. You guys, you should go get Lisa's free course. She threw me a little bit, the summit first. I just got it because she's been talking about her hiking metaphor. So summit first. Yes. Get to the summit first, then work your way backwards. That's the entire thing. And here's why you should go get this free course. It is a living, breathing example of these principles at work. And this is my absolute favorite way to learn anything, is not by someone teaching me, although that's obviously important. But if you can learn by deconstructing the examples that they're putting out there, that's even more powerful. So pick up Lisa's Summit First Framework course and pay attention not only to what she's saying, but how she presents the material. I think you'll learn a lot in that exercise. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes. Lisa, what should I have asked you that I didn't? Any closing thoughts, anything really important that you want to make sure that everybody knows about?
Gosh, I don't think so. I think we covered a lot.
Yeah, we did. I took a whole page of notes, you guys. So yeah, I think we covered a lot. I've been making courses for 6 years now. I've made 70 courses, I think, in that time. I've made a lot of courses, and even I learned a few things today. So Lisa, I want to thank you for that. This has been phenomenal.
I will say one thing. Your
yes.
point, and it was actually a point I put in my notes about, following people and then modeling what they do. And that's very, I would say to the listeners, it's very true of Cindy's courses. Model what she does when you take her courses, model what she does, because she knows course design from experience and she follows the principles that I teach. And so you will do well to model Cindy's courses as well.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for that. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Lisa, thank you for being here on the show. I really appreciate you. And we will catch you all next week.
If you like what you hear on the Tiny Course Empire podcast, you're going to love all of the courses and workshops and support you'll find inside Six Figure Systems. That's my monthly program where we dig into online marketing for regular people like you and me. We don't do big launches, we don't have the big headaches, and we don't have the big expenses that come with them. Instead, we focus on creating repeatable, sustainable systems that continue to grow over time and that don't suck up all of our energy or require a 10-person team to manage. You can come see what we're all about at sixfiguresystems.com, and I'll see you on the inside.